you.
Yeah, I think I got a little nervous though. I wanted to keep it short though because it was ladies' night and it felt a little uncomfortable being on stage.
Yeah,
I was up there for maybe 30 seconds.
Nice. So I'm looking forward to the piece you write. And you can find the Chico Vibe in the Homewood Street Journal. They ship 500 copies up here. We kind of serendipitously, a little bit like Santa in the summer. I come around, I put him in the coffee shops.
Yeah, you were out the entire time during Chico's ladies' night.
Yeah, I was like Santa.
I was like, where are you? I need guidance. I don't know where I'm supposed to be.
Guidance. Yeah, I was thinking the same thing. I could have used some guidance. It was fun in here, though, man.
That was great.
All the artists came through here. But what we got for you today, we are doing a whole show around homelessness, experiencing homelessness as a youth. And in that context, it is, you know, anywhere from grade school all the way up to 24, 25 years of age. And I run a show 5 to 5:30 every Wednesday called Without a Roof. We're doing the whole month, man. The whole month's going to be about this topic. So we're going to stretch that into today's program. And today's program, speaking of today's program, we are going to start off with someone that I have a tremendous amount of respect for, Shahara Hyatt, who for about 7-8 years, maybe longer, I should even be saying the date without having it in front of me, but she's been director of this thing called the California Homeless Youth Project. And she has some really really poignant vignettes out on there, like I do for Without a Roof, but she interviews youth. So we're going to lead the show with two of them, and one of them is about The Street Through My Eyes, and it's really cool. It's just, you can even hear the cars, you know, the person just walking you through. And then the next one we're going to do is from seeking services to a service provider themselves. This is about like a homeless youth that's now helping other people. They're both really cool pieces, and I just have a huge shout out for Shahara Hyatt and all the work that she does with the California Homeless Youth Project. Then we're going to transition into Josh Indar talking about mentoring with writing, man. I know you've done Writing for Donuts at 6th Street, right?
Mm-hmm.
Wonderful program.
Yeah, Josh is great.
And then we're going to slip in the very first interview I did on KZFR. Well, I shouldn't say on KZFR, on the Without a Roof radio program. I did a peace and social justice show a couple of weeks prior, but on July 2nd, 2015, we launched the Without a Roof radio program, and the Josh Indar piece and the Kyle Maxson piece are from that. So I guess with no further ado, you know, when we're done, Mark, our correspondent, and I are going to have a little studio conversation about what we just heard. And there we go. Thank you for listening to People Powered Radio.
This is Hollywood Boulevard right here. This right here over here is my friend's place. Pretty much that's like, you know, where people get showers and stuff, and you know, they pretty much chill. It's supposed to be like a safe haven, you know, an opportunity to get off the streets, you know, when the cops, you know, screwing with people. This is the Los Angeles Free Clinic. This is where people could come to get free medical care and, you know, bus tokens, counseling, therapy, stuff like that. You could get a free rapid HIV test here. Right now, we're still on Hollywood and Bronson. This is, I call it the third drop-in center of the day. It's the last one. They open from 6 to 12. It's called the Weigh-In. Pretty much, you know, it's the same thing as my friend's place. Not too many services, but they have you can shower there. You eat, they serve you dinner. It's just like another safe haven because, like, you know, at night, that's like, it seems like that's when the cops like really want to start screwing with people. This is where I got into a confrontation with the cops. We were all sleeping, you know, just waking up, and they roll up, you know, running their mouth, you know, telling us to leave. And, you know, I ended up saying, you know, a few things, and they wanted to like slam me against the wall. A couple of my other friends, you know, they got up, you know, they started, you know, cursing him out, telling him to leave me alone. As they just pushing my head into the wall and handcuffing me, and they throw me into the back of the car, and I go to jail for the weekend. And so right now we're on Wall and Fifth, if I'm not mistaken. Pretty much this is pretty much where a lot of the cops drop off, you know, a lot of the older homeless people. When I got out of jail, this is exactly where I ended up. But a lot of homeless youth don't hang out down here. just because it's just really dangerous. When I got out of jail, pretty much I was just on my own. I didn't have anything. My backpack, you know, ended up missing in jail. I have a lot of dictionaries and just a little bit of food, because I'm a writer, so I love, like, you know, looking up new words. Lots of people carry clothes in their backpack, and clothes and just valuables that, you know, things that they don't want to lose because they have nowhere else to store them. Like, either they can't afford a storage unit because it's too, you know, expensive, so they carry, like, you know, a lot of, like, clothes in their backpack. I had a backpack, you know, with humongous, like, travel, like, size backpack with a sleeping bag in it. But just having the sleeping bag on me was always a problem, just for the simple fact that I couldn't really get a job, and I didn't want to store it because I need it for that night, you know. And, you know, other people come up to steal your stuff. A backpack is honestly the only thing that, you know, a homeless person, like, really has, you know, to hold on to. And when you, like, you wake up in the morning and it's either gone or even your shoes, you know, like, even your shoes are gone. It's like, it's a really screwed up feeling, you know.
So I've been in foster care since birth, and that was basically my upbringing. Many homes, many different families, many different situations. When I was younger, growing up in the foster care system, because my placements weren't stable or there was conditions in which my social worker wasn't looking upon, I was forced to run away. First time I ran away, where I was homeless for about a week span, I was 8 years old. After 14 foster homes, I stopped counting. My needs as far as food was not being met in the home. And a lot of abuse was happening in the home, so I had to leave the home, and that caused me into homelessness. So I slept on the streets for 4.5 months. And during that time, I was only lucky to have a couple of friends who let me couch surf. Other than that, I was pretty much in the streets. I started utilizing the services that are available to me because I am a transition age youth, as well as because I am a former foster youth. I'm just trying to stay off the streets pretty much, so I'm working hard, trying to save as much money as I can. Here, the work that I do as far as a peer educator and facilitator is educating girls and other youth about resources that are available, as well as facilitating workshops, health education workshops, games, just different things so girls can learn to explore themselves in a better and healthier way than learn from what the outside environment has to teach us. This is the drop-in center I run for girls. It's a confidential facility. People of the public don't really know the address because it's a safe place for the girls. We have a book club. Currently right now we're reading my mentor, Cupcake Brown, A Piece of Cake by Cupcake Brown. It's a great story. This woman was also homeless and went through a lot of things with drugs and so on and so forth. And now she's one of the most successful women I know. This is my information and resource table that I've laid out. This is so people know how to get to teen clinics. There's condoms for safe sex. There's personal information to get into bank accounts, stuff for the DMVs, as well as No Justice, which is basically a book that lets you know all your rights as a youth and as someone who has been charged with crimes. One of my jobs, it's purely advocation, taking input from other youth, advocating for our needs and what's needed for system changes, things of that sort. Existing services need to push to at least the maximum transition age youth age, which is 24, I believe. I don't think youth nowadays at 18 are completely ready to fend on their own without the assistance of the government, especially youth that's been in some bad situations or bad circumstances, not even just youth that come from foster care, but youth that come from all backgrounds. It doesn't stop here. I definitely want to keep helping people who have had situations like mine, people who've been through homelessness, foster care, sexual exploitation, things of that sort. I definitely want to further my career in helping people with that. I definitely want to get a BA in mass communications and then eventually get my MSW. I was enrolled in 12 units when I was homeless because I figured I have nothing else to do. I might as well go to school. Well, finally receiving housing, I had to quit school in order to focus on providing income so I could be able to pay for the roof over my head. Definitely difficult when it came down to storing things, books, so on and so forth. How to do your homework. I spent a lot of time in the public facility of the school, such as the cafeteria, the library, whatever was open until as late as possible to do my homework. It definitely was hard. As well as trying to just get there every day and maintain your head on your shoulders, being knowing that you have nowhere to go, knowing you have nothing, but just still trying to do something progressive and good for yourself. Something that I wished I had that I didn't have, definitely more instant housing. It was like, you know, I was homeless for months. So that experience within itself, you know, it doesn't allow you to do anything else, because if you don't have a home, you're not really focused on work, you're not really focused on school, so on and so forth. So definitely more emergency housing to get you into transitional housing, and then transitional housing eventually turning into permanent housing. That would definitely be a service that I'd be interested in becoming established. I currently live in a temporary housing placement. That's through THP money for foster youth, former foster youth. And I've been living there for a while, and I'm very blessed. And my time limit is soon due, and I have about 6 more months, if that. And so I'm really worried. And from that point, I just hope that I'm working hard enough to continue having a home.
Radio. It's for Justice, made possible by the generous contributions, case of our supporters, and by Friends of the Arts, a state local partner to the California Arts Council. Since 2001, Friends of the Arts has been creating economic opportunity through arts and culture by producing community festivals and events, including Oktoberfest, Chico Palio, the True Natura, Silent Film Festival, NorCal Jazz Festival, Salmon Festival, and more. To learn more about Friends of the Arts, visit Friends of Arts, stateupstate.org. That's Friends of Hearts, upstate.org. That is a lot of characters there, guys. And by Chico Skywatch, offering informational film about geoengineering and aerosol climate spraying on the fourth Thursdays of every month at no charge. Chico Skywatch also sends local water samples to a state-certified lab for heavy metal testing. More information, chicoskywatch.org. And check them out, man. They're out there weekly at the Saturday Farmers Market. Turn it over to Mark, man. Mark Alexander, what do you got on those two pieces, man?
Honestly, it was a little hard to listen to when she mentioned that she was 8 years old when she first became homeless. That's hard to even imagine. I can kind of relate to it, since even though when I was an adult when I became homeless, I was young enough to sort of be in that age group of homeless youth or youth in danger of being homeless. And I feel like the number one resource that services and counselors provided for me was just like knowledge and education on what could be done and where I can get help. And it's awesome that that's sort of what she does as a living, for a living now. And I can definitely I know what she's talking about in terms of when all your belongings are basically a backpack and a sleeping bag, yeah, and you're trying to get a job, and just having a sleeping bag is a telltale that you're
right,
a homeless person, and now you can't get that job because they refuse to hire someone with that label on their head, and that's just awful, and I wish that weren't the case.
What were some of the things that you didn't want to leave behind that you traveled around in your forays of
ruthlessness? I spent a couple months in my sister's car, but she needed that back. So I was in a homeless shelter for about 5 months. I don't even remember what I had. I had my laptop, which was basically my most expensive item and my most precious need to be secure at all time. Like, I wouldn't leave that alone because it's basically my only connection to the outside world.
Yeah.
Including, you know, since a lot of jobs you need to apply for online now. Other than that, I guess I had some clothes, and that was basically it, you know?
Mm-hmm. Amazing. I thought it was interesting him talking about, you know, having his shoes stolen. You know, you need to be watching whatever you got.
That's unbelievable.
Sleeping out there rough, you know? But, yeah, I had a hard time with the 8-year-old, you know, and then the whole idea of 14 foster homes and being abused in many of them. You know, I don't think people understand that dynamic. I think everyone's got this idea, like, you know, everyone that signs up to be a foster parent has got plenty of income, and they're like, you know, Ozzie and Harriet, the Partridge Family, and they have all this time with their kids, and it's popcorn and apple pie. And it really, you know, there are those, but there just is a lot of people that are in that system just looking at each head that walks through their door as money. And I think that's kind of sad.
Yeah, and I can't even imagine what it's like being shipped into a home and then finding out that that's just an abusive environment and that I need to be homeless, because it's just not as bad as being in an abusive environment.
Yeah, I would tell people homelessness is always a choice, and many people are choosing to be homeless instead of getting the crap beat out of them or whatever they're putting up with, sexual abuse. I mean, that one person had talked about, you know, sexual exploitation. I think that was the young lady, that the one that went on to do peer educating with girls. But I will say, I'm going to be doing some work this Friday. I do have a show called The Chico Vibe, and I'm going to have Alex Kokonakis, who's going to be talking about STOP, which is all about human trafficking, which is on the front page of the Chico News and Review, this edition that came out today. So, anything else before we transition to our next piece with from the inaugural July 2nd, 2015 Without a Roof radio program featuring Josh Indar talking about mentoring and writing and all a bunch of stuff?
I don't think so. I think that's about it.
Cool. You know, it's fun. It's actually fun to do this piece like this, because Mark and I met in the green room. He's kind of telling him what's going on. I'm like, man, I've got like a whole show for this, because you were just talking about it'd be nice to have someone to mentor, you know, to help you. And that's what Josh is going to be talking about. Josh Indar is a program here on KZFR, and he also works for School Ties of Butte County, which works through McKinney-Vento with folks that are students that are at risk for homeless or homeless. And he does mentoring. So here you go. Josh Indar here on People Power Radio. Man, I would really like to know what a day in the life of a mentor looks like.
I don't know if I can give you like a day of mentoring, because that's not like all that I do. You know, I do a lot of like coordinating and a lot of tutoring. And usually the mentoring kind of comes through that, where I'll be helping out a student who needs help with school. And then you realize, like, well, this is a really smart kid. Like, how much help do they need? They need help with school, but it's also a lot of the reasons that they're maybe not doing well in school is because of what else is going on in their life. And that's kind of where the mentoring comes in for me, is talking to them about how to move forward in their life, and really just kind of being there for them to text. And usually, I mean, that's how youth are really communicating with each other, and especially with me now. I mean, phone calls are sort of things of the past, but then, you know, we'll text and we'll meet up, we'll have coffee, and really just talking. That's what mentoring is really just talking, and also trying to provide some type of role modeling in a way, you know. I just try to show that you can make it, you can have a decent life, and not really give up on a lot of the things that youth, for whatever reason, feel that they need to give up on, you know, their personality or their style or whatever. A lot of youth are just afraid that they'll lose something if they, you know, if they have to square up, right? If they have to take on a square lifestyle that's not them. And I'm like, no, you don't have to do that. You know, you have to do certain things. You have to keep yourself well. You have to find a way to make money, or, you know, to keep yourself stable or whatever. But you don't have to go so far that you lose yourself. And I think that might be what holds some kids back. I know that when I was younger and looking towards the future, it scared the hell out of me, because I thought that it involved, you know, like that I would have to be someone else. But you really can't just make your way. And that's what I try to impart.
So how many youth do you work with? I mean, in a typical day?
What's a typical day? Here is a Tuesday is that I'll go to the homeless task force meeting, right? And then I'll try to see what's going on with the community and make contacts there, so that if someone asks me for resources, I'm like, oh, I just saw that person over there. We can, you know, do that. Then I have a meeting that's work-related. Then at 3 o'clock, I'll go tutor someone at the library. And then at 4:30, I'll go and tutor someone else. And then after that, I'll go home and have dinner and band practice. Like, that's kind of a sort of a typical day for me. Or I'll go out to a CYC meeting, which is foster youth. That's mentoring, but it's also advocating for change within the system. So it's kind of a lot of that. or, you know, or I'll do the writing for donuts thing every Wednesday. And, you know, sometimes there's 10 youth there, sometimes there's none.
It seems like what you're describing, you tutor most days.
Yeah, almost every day there's someone to tutor. And of course, right now it's summer, so with people out of school, that slows way down. I have had school years where I'm, you know, tutoring for 4 hours out of the day, which is a little bit tough because I'm also supposed to be coordinating all of these other tutors. And then if I'm always tutoring, then I can't do that too. So I've had to sort of cut back, and it's a lot of tutoring. It's a lot of in school and after school. And, you know, I've met kids everywhere. But then, I mean, I've done tutoring under trees, you know, at hotels and, you know, trailers and wherever they are. You know, that's the thing with our program is that we will go wherever that young person is.
So when you say tutor, I hear education. I mean, I would assume that it's kind of blended. So at the same time, you'll be doing a little mentoring if there's anything you need to help them with and a little bit of tutoring. Or are they separate entities? Are they separate things?
It depends on the youth. Sometimes they need a little bit more and they're good about asking for it. Other times they don't want anything but the help with their school. And it's whatever they want, and it's really dictated by their personality and their needs. You know, I do work for the Office of Education, and our focus is on education. And education is gonna be the key for a lot of these young people to get out of homeless situations. And so that is really what we focus on. As far as mentoring, I mean, the mentoring is a little bit sort of in addition to that. But we really do focus on trying to get them through school because, man, if you don't have a diploma in this economic climate, you know, you're stewed. There's so few jobs out there. You know, when I was younger, at least you could go and there was jobs that you could do without that high school diploma. Now that's a huge barrier. You know, they see that on an application and they just throw it in the trash.
My quick story, because it's a fun one, it's a short one, but I went to my guidance counselor because I hated school. It was just too boring. I hated it. It was boring. Yeah. And I was going to quit and take my GED. And he talked me into graduating early so I could go in the Navy. Uh-huh. And when I can't remember the whole conversation because that's many, many years ago, but he really had a good point. He's like, you know, if you're going to quit on the first thing you're going to quit on of substance is high school diploma, anyone's going to be looking at you going, you know, why did you quit?
That's true. But, you know, those other options are okay, too. I mean, if you have a GED, you do have a diploma. I got out early with the Chesapeake, the California High School Proficiency Exam, because I could not handle school. I'd been through too many schools and it didn't work for me. We do also try to assess what each student is going to need and what they're capable of and how they're going to move on. Because, you know, honestly, some students have been out of school for so long, especially if they've been homeless or if they've run away. And even a lot in the foster care system, you know, that I've known kids who haven't gone to school until they're 12 years old. Or I've known kids who have dropped out of school when, you know, in sixth grade and then they come back to high school. Man, you can't do that, you know, because you've missed so much that, you know, trying to backfill all that education while you're going to school all day, you know, something else has to happen there. So if it's the GED or the Chesapeake test or whatever it is, that's going to just get them over that barrier so they can move into the workforce or go and do whatever they want, you know, but that's got to happen because otherwise, you know, they're coming back, you know, 21 years old, no diploma, and they haven't been... They've forgotten most of the stuff that they've learned, and then they try to get a GED, and it's very, very hard.
I saw this at Writing at Donuts because, you know, I did that, you know, writing for a donut. But part of the skill set you need is really just as storytellers, because we're both storytellers. So I just see this look on your face, you know, and I saw that in Sixth Street. You know, you're like, you introduce yourself to some young person, and then you start asking them about how things are going, and then you immediately get excited when they come back. There's just this, there's a real power to that, because a lot of these kids, they don't get that positive, literal positive reinforcement. And the one question I really had around that was, so many youth that I work with, they get down on the fact that they can't do this or won't do it. But if you can work with them over a couple of weeks, kind of explaining how they can do it, that might be the first time anyone's had that level of conversation with them, which mm-hmm. is amazing.
Well, yeah, I think there's always someone in your life that's telling you that you're either going to do it wrong or you're doing it wrong or you're not going to make it or you can't do things that way. And I don't think that that's really helpful. I think that a lot of younger people just need to be told that, yeah, you can do it. Try it a different way. Try it. Do it the way that you want to do it. There's also an element of sort of getting used to failure and then expecting that that's only going to happen again, when, you know, failure is just a learning opportunity and it's got to be treated that way. There's not so much space to fail, I think, that in our society, you know, there's only so many times that you can lose your grasp on that ladder before you decide that you're just not going to try to climb it again. And that, to me, is the sort of the big problem with what's going on in America right now, is that ladder is very hard to reach, and once you fall off, it's hard to get back on again. There's got to be an alternative to that, and there's got to be someone in everyone's life who says, you know, just keep trying, or trying in a different way, or you know, let's look at this from a different perspective and see if, you know, what you were doing wrong, you can change this one little thing, and then all of a sudden, you know, you're climbing it again. There's a weird idea of success out there that is very sort of materialistic and sort of enforced by the media, where that if you don't have these specific material things, then you are a failure, and that has to just be broken down, because that's not what an authentic life is based on. You know, I think that we do have this materialistic way of looking at success in our society, and that's not what life is about. That's not what brings happiness.
I was really excited about your thoughts on, you know, long form writing and how empowering that would be to the youth that you see, versus coming in, writing a poem, and getting a donut.
I mean, I just think that telling their whole story is really transformative for a lot of these youth, and it's also like taking control of that narrative in their life is essentially taking control of their life. There's not much difference, I think, in people's life and people's stories. I mean, I love seeing poems, and I love seeing, you know, shorter stories and frivolous things, and I love everything that these youth do in the writing for Donuts, but it's so short. They're just these tiny little fragments of this longer story. And I think that if we can get them to tell more of the full story, then it's really helpful to them. And it's also easier for the reader to understand more where kids are coming from if they see the whole story. If they see, like, oh, why are you homeless? Oh, okay, so you were kicked out of your house, or you're being abused, so you ran away, or, you know, like, you don't get that much context or detail just with a poem. However great that poem may be, it's still just this tiny, tiny little piece of the larger story. I've done some research into that. There's really like a therapeutic aspect to it. You know, taking control of that narrative in your life, you can change your own story from tragedy to triumph. You know, you can change that ending. You can change the whole way that you look at it, you know, and perspective is everything. If you look back and see your life as just one tragedy after another, you know, what are you going to have to look forward to? And what are you going to be, how is that going to affect your behavior moving forward? Whereas if you look at, oh my God, I've overcome all these things, it's so much more empowering. It's so much of a more like a healthier way to look at it, and it allows you to, you go from being a victim to being a hero of your own story. That's what a lot of people need.
But what I find out fascinating from what I do, Josh, just talking to youth over time, is after you get by that initial, you know, who are you, do I trust you, and all those little dynamics, they want to tell more of their story. And
everyone does.
Exactly. So I actually see the whole writing for donuts. It gets them interested in doing it. And now I think it's really blazingly cool that you're actually going to go, let's take it to the next step.
Yeah, no, that is what I want to do, is take it to the next step, to where we're really telling people stories and really handing that control of the narrative of their life over to them. Because you can do anything you want with it. I'm trying to remember the name of the guy who wrote Man's Search for Meaning. I think his name is Viktor Frankl, and he was in a concentration camp. And this is kind of what he learned throughout this whole horrible, horrible ordeal that he went through. Probably just the absolute worst thing you can imagine. And he comes out of it with this idea that through telling the story of it, he is actually controlling what happened and what is going to happen in the future. If we can control our own stories, we can control our own lives, and we can control how we feel about things and how much things affect us and in what way, and how much we learn and how much we grow from these experiences. Someone can go through that and come out of it with an attitude that says, you know, that they will endure and that they can find meaning from that, then people can do that for anything.
All right, thanks again. You know, so much, Margo, it's so fun. I haven't listened to that in a couple of years, and that's a really strong piece. Thanks so much. For listeners just joining, this is the Youth for Justice program, Guillermo Mesh. But that was Josh Hind, our mentor, coordinator for Butte County Office of Ed School Ties program. What do we got, Mark? You said you had a lot, man. There was a lot of things coming for you.
First, I'd just like to say that Josh is an amazing guy. Yes. I think his writing for doing this program is amazing, giving homeless youth a voice and giving them just something to do and write about. It's amazing.
It is.
There's so much I'd like to say. I guess I'll start with the fact that I can only imagine what it's like starting school at the age of 12. That's hard to even comprehend.
Both of us. Like,
as well as skipping a couple grades, like going straight from sixth grade to high school. And he's exactly right. Like, probably the hardest challenge with that isn't just the fact that you have so much to learn. It's mostly just kind of the social environment. I think that there's a sort of really heavy pressure from other, in our society, just in general, to succeed and to be at, you know, I guess even just normal. I felt something just like that, actually, when I first came back to Butte College after being homeless and on hiatus. Mm-hmm. And I hadn't done well in school in a long time. And I remember just kind of like, I talked about this at Celebration, where it was just a really weird feeling seeing all these kids who were just so successful. I know they weren't kids, they were becoming adults, mm-hmm. but they just seemed like they had this all figured out and they knew how to be really successful at school. And it was something I hadn't had figured out, and it's something I've kind of had to go through a process with.
Can I slip in a question?
Yeah.
You know, what things do you wish you had learned in school before you had graduated high school that might have helped you as a young adult?
I guess mostly, it's hard, I guess, to put it into a box, just being an adult is something they do not teach you in school. Like, I remember when I first started becoming responsible for myself, you know, when I became homeless, one of the most important things I was talking about this earlier just today on the radio show, like, one of the most important things that they gave me, as well as they give a lot of people, is just the confidence and the knowledge to navigate the world we live in. Like, I remember just filling out a form for like Medi-Cal or CalFresh. It was just, it's stressful because I've never done anything like that.
Right.
And filling out trying to get a FAFSA, financial aid, all sorts of stuff. And it's almost like I just wish when I was younger there was someone there to teach me that, rather either from home or just from school if that wasn't available.
Or maybe someone that could have went with you at those first couple of times. Maybe. I've gone to one stop with people before, helped them out.
Well, that's really, I mean, how I've gotten through this whole process that I've gone through is other people helping me. And and now it's great because now I am living pretty much independently, and I'm due for almost entirely living dependently this November. So that's exciting.
It is exciting, Mark.
Yeah.
And I think I've known you, I think I've known you 2 years, haven't I? It's just amazing to see you.
Yeah.
To see...
I've gone from living in a shelter infested with bed bugs to living in my own apartment, which I'm paying for, and I have a job, and I'm doing things that I really like, and I know a lot of people who I care about and care about me. Yeah. It's amazing.
You know, actually, to tie it into something that Josh had said, you know, that I'd seen immediately in you, Mark, you talked a little bit about, you know, transposing this, but... You know, if you look back at your life and it's a tragedy, you know, what do you think you're going to have going forward? And kind of this underlying idea of being positive. But the very first time I met you, you had some time, you know, at the Youth for Justice, at Peace and Justice Center. I'm like, this is a guy that's got a good head on his shoulders, but he's looking at life as an opportunity and not getting hung up on the fact he had to live in his sister's car and he's homeless right now. You always kind of impress me like that. And then those are the people I see that do the best. They kind of got this attitude of, you know, we got to look at the glass half full instead of, you know, half
empty. That's just the way you have to look at it. Yeah. I mean, anyone who's dealing with these sort of situations, a lot of people, including myself when I was younger, is I would just kind of beat myself up for not doing well in school. And but I think I never took the moment to realize how much my home life was affecting my ability to actually succeed at anything, and how it was affecting my own psychology, you know? And I can definitely say that in terms of, one of the things that's helped me is just to be, learning to just be genuine and not worry about, like, how people see me, which is something I definitely have to agree probably weighs heavy on kids who are coming back to school when they think about the fact that they have to catch up. I mean, and the fact that they may be homeless right now and they've suffered through that, they're probably really embarrassed to talk about those sort of things. And I don't know, I wish someone had told me this when I was younger, but I think being confident in who you are and just being genuine is the most admirable thing you can do in front of people, especially if you've come from that sort of background. I've always been really scared to be honest and just be honest about who, the sort of things I've been through and the sort of struggles I've had, but I realized that was just ridiculous.
Right.
It's just a part of who I am, and I guess is made me all the better.
Yeah, I would say that for sure. I think what else is nice, and it's too, because this is going to be a cool segue, because Kyle Maxson has that trait. Kyle's always impressed me as someone that's just like, I'm Kyle, here I am, right, Kyle?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's just that whole idea of, you know, being in a space where you can feel comfortable about yourself. But the thing I was going to say was, you know, you and Kyle and others and Oliver Stagger, who was actually the one that did the Youth for Justice sign. Shout out to Oliver if you're listening, because she liked it when I posted her old poster. But the voices that you bring to this venue and otherwise is showing some really good leadership qualities, in that not everyone can talk about this stuff. You know, not everyone is at the space you and I are, or the personality where they can get on the air and talk about these tough things. But I think it gives people hope, you know, that are in that situation. So I really have always appreciated you and others that can do that, man.
Yeah, and I hope inspires people to basically come out of their shell and realize that they don't have anything to be ashamed of for the hard things that they've been through.
I had when I did the Without a Roof show with Carrington, he was like the music producer for like 6 months, but I'm like, I had this conversation afterwards, Mark, with him and his friend. I'm like, I don't know why we're not talking about homeless people as heroes, man. You know, especially if you're 12 years old, you've been living on the street, you got to go to school, you got to figure out where you're sleeping. You know, to me, they don't reach this quote unquote mythical, you know, ring of success. But these people are heroes just for their ability to, you know, quote unquote, survive in the environment they're in and show up for school every day. These people are heroes, man. Big time.
Hard to believe.
Yeah.
Especially when you're out on the streets by the time you're 8.
Mm-hmm.
Or you didn't start school until you're 12.
Yeah, exactly. Well, let's jump into this Kyle Maxson piece. And I had fun listening to this, too, because this is, like I said, this is another piece from the July 2nd premiere of the Without a Roof radio program. And hope you're listening, Kyle. And if you're not, man, I'll give you a big high five the next time I see you here on People Power Radio. Next up is a neat and really powerful interview with Kyle Maxson, a formerly homeless 22-year-old, that reinforces Josh's message on telling your own story is taking control of your life. As you'll see, that is exactly what my friend Kyle Maxson has done and continues to do. Enjoy. Kyle Maxson, I've known Kyle for 2 years, man. Give me five. We'll do that at the beginning.
Nice.
Are you excited about the opportunity to do an interview?
Yeah, pretty excited.
Pretty excited. It's not as excited as getting a job at Krispy Kreme, but, you know.
Yes, I did. I did get a job, and I'm really happy about that. I'm really happy.
All right, Kyle. Hey, I want to start this off because you and I had talked, you know, earlier, kind of prepping this. And I had told you the old storytelling, how you need a wolf to kind of dress the story up so people understand what you had to overcome. So if you can give us a little of your backstory about what the wolves were as you grew up, we can transition to how you conquered your wolves, man.
Yeah, I got some wolves. I was born here in California. I had a brother and a druggie mom. I actually have a little brother, and I don't really know because I never really got to meet him. Anyway, yeah, me and my brother got separated when we were two, so I haven't seen him or my mom since then. He recently got a hold of me on Facebook, just in the past year, and he lives down in Florida. He's doing really well, like really well. He's got a fiance, and he's planning on getting married, and so I mean, I lost a mom and a brother. I went to go live with my disabled dad and a stepmom that I really never accepted into my life. It was a pretty rough childhood. I went from being a bully in second grade to being a complete nerd by the time I was in fifth. And by the time I got to ninth grade, I'd been getting into trouble. Ended up in a group home, separated from my family. And it might have been the best thing to ever happen to me. I mean, it was kind of a, you know, an introduction to the real world. Probably the closest thing until I turned 18. And even not even then, I mean, like, when I turned 18, I got kicked out of my place and I was homeless. I was homeless for about a year and a half. You know, I tried to go to college. I tried to go to school. I think I dropped out. And I ended up getting in trouble and going to prison. I served a year in Solano State Prison. And got out when I was on parole, and I was homeless. I gotta tell you, I kicked butt on parole. I got off parole. I got a job. I got a place. I was going to college. You know, I got a job as a bike mechanic, which is freaking awesome. I gotta tell you, I really like that. Now I got a job at Krispy Kreme, and I'm gonna find another place, and I've got my feet where they need to be, and they're gonna hold me up. Life is looking great.
We had this whole dialogue around an excellent way you described this is, you know, being on meth since you were in the third grade. Explain that.
I was a normal kid. I was just a normal kid. I mean, I was getting beaten at home, so I was kind of violent at school. You know, I kind of learned how to be that way. You know, and you know, violence begets violence. But I guess, you know, the problem was me. It wasn't the fact that I was getting beaten. I was the problem for getting into fights. And, you know, they took me into a doctor and they got me diagnosed with ADHD. And they had me on Adderall. And, you know, it would kind of be like, well, he's still getting into trouble. It's up dosage. And eventually they got me on the highest dosage. And I mean, like, I knew my name, and I knew how to do math and science, but I, goddamn, that was meth. I mean, that was just meth, and I was on that from the time I was in third grade up to the time I was in ninth. I mean, stunted my growth. I was just, like, a nerdy kid that couldn't socialize. Just, you know, I'd skip lunch and just go into the library and read and keep myself away from everybody, and it was kind of like, I don't know, it was pretty tough, man.
One thing I want to focus on too from our discussion yesterday was, you know, how you'd kind of describe things were going pretty well until it was like your dad's kind of like, dude, you're 18, here you go, here's your bags, they drop you off at the plaza, you know. And the reason I wanted to focus on that is because so often, you know, this occurs where, you know, someone's placed out of their home for whatever the reasons your dad had, and now you're like, you're not ready to be on your own. Yeah, I mean, maybe if you could describe that a little bit, how you felt to be dropped off in the plaza with a backpack.
I was going to school. I guess I didn't get very good grades at one point, but you know, I was still holding in there, and I was still going. And my stepmom told me one day, you know, she had heard from the school that I was going to be passing this year. Whenever, you know, I wasn't gonna graduate. I thought, well, hey, you know, like, I've got another 2 weeks, you know, that I don't have to go to school. I'm not gonna graduate. I'm gonna go have fun. I mean, it doesn't make sense to go to school if it's not gonna, you know, it's not gonna help me. Which wasn't great thinking on my part, but I found out later from the school that I in fact would have graduated, and I was on track to graduate. I probably was just looking for an excuse to go hang out with friends. But, I mean, like, honestly, I didn't expect that lie to come from somebody in my family. So I dropped out of school. When I turned 18, my dad kicked me out because I was no longer going to school. He had me pack up my stuff, and asked me where I wanted to go, and I said, I guess Chico, you know, it's a little bigger, you know. Paradise is cold, they don't got anything from me, so let's go down to Chico. He dropped me down to Chico. I had all my stuff, and he just dropped me off at the plaza, and I was just standing there on the curb for a good couple minutes trying to figure out what the hell happened, you know, like, I don't know. Your life just walks away from you. Everything you knew is gone, and you're just standing there with a trash bag full of clothes and no freaking clue of what you're going to do. So that was terrifying, to be honest. It was terrifying. I managed to meet some people who were homeless and my age, which was convenient, and didn't know them at all, but I figured I'd probably get the lay of the land by, you know, hanging out with these people. They are the people that introduced me to Sixth Street. And Sixth Street kicked butt. I mean, for the first year I was homeless, I'd use their services for hygiene purposes and communication purposes. I eventually tried to go back to school at Oroville Adult School. I went to go live with my grandma. It didn't go so good for me. I don't know what was going on, but I ended up getting in trouble, and that's when I went to prison. Did a year in prison, and when I got out, Sixth Street, you know, was there to help me when I got out. You know, they'd give me food, they keep me clean, and they helped me write up a resume. They were the people who helped me get the job at the bike shop. You know, there was a time where I'd been, like, you know, really trying. You know, they saw that, and they put me in a motel. You know, we were still looking for jobs, and I got to stay in a motel up till I found a job. And when I found a job, you know, they helped me find a place. They helped me enroll in college. So, I mean, Sixth Street got me off the street, like, big time.
I actually have to tell this story and maybe get a little backstory or a laugh even. Because about 8 months ago, I saw you and I was talking about, have you been in Sixth Street? And you were like, nah, it's my fault. I did something really, really stupid. I've been kicked out. But then you're like, but man, dude, you won't believe this. They actually come once a week and they meet me to help me with life skills. You know, how cool is that?
That was freaking awesome. Like, that's how committed they are to, like, really just watching somebody grow and help somebody. I mean, I got in trouble and I couldn't go on the property. But my case manager would still come meet me at the public library and help me type up a resume. And I got a job. I was, you know, still on the street. You know, they didn't have a place to help me, but they'd go out of their way to make my life better.
So how important is it to have adult role models in your life? You know, people that are there to help you, people that are there like, yeah, Kyle, go get him, or, you know, hey, you need some help with this, or, you know, how important is that?
I never really was around kids my age. So, I mean, I kind of grew up as an adult. I mean, I didn't really have a childhood. It was just, you know, I didn't have anybody to reassure me that being a kid was okay. So it was just, you know, being an adult. So, I don't know, an adult role model. I think I just wanted a friend, you know? Just really wanted a friend.
That's actually the backstory I wanted to cover. It comes back. And the most fascinating part that you and I talked about yesterday, we had talked, and I had kind of said, I don't have a lot of friends either, Kyle. It's kind of like, I don't have anyone I can physically call up today or, you know, whatever. But we had this dialogue around, you've met, quote-unquote, adults, once again, this loaded word, adults in your life. But it's almost like, well, I meet him at Sixth Street, or I meet him there, or I meet him here, and it's like they're just doing their job, and that doesn't really seem like, you know, friendship.
You know, for the longest time, I figured that, you know, like, anybody who wanted to help you was, you know, just in it for, you know, like, they were required to. Like, Sixth Street was kind of difficult at first with Sixth Street, you know. It was just like, you know, you don't know me, you don't know anything about me, you don't know why I'm here or how I feel about it, you know. Like, I can hang out with these homeless kids, you know, and, you know, they kind of probably got some backstory that's similar to mine, and, you know, you're just here, and, you know, you probably, you know, you get paid to be here. I mean, it's pretty cool to be here, but, you know, you just get paid to be here. You don't really care about me at all. Like, outside of Sixth Street, like, we don't really talk. I mean, like, you wouldn't talk to me outside of Sixth Street. I'm a nobody. Like, I want somebody who actually, like, wants, you know, wants what's good for me because they care about me, you know, like, they feel good that I feel good. Like, that's a friend. And, you know, it was really difficult for the first year of Sixth Street because, you know, it just looked like caseworkers helping, a customer or something. That's why it blew my mind when I got kicked off the property and they'd still come out and help me. Like, they cared. Like, that is what helped me. That's what helped me so much. Like, when somebody cares or shows an interest in somebody else's life, that's honestly, like, we are what? Like, we're social animals. We need the comfort. We need the support of other people. So if nobody had shown an interest in my life, I probably wouldn't be right now. You know, I had a pretty gnarly wound on my arm. I didn't care, you know. I was gonna become septic and die. That was the story. Somebody called me up and offered me a week at a motel. I was like, well, I like, you know, being inside. It's really hot. I'll take a motel, you know. I only got 3 days at the motel. Like, she only gave me 3 days. You know, I mean, like, nobody really showed they cared, even at that point. Like, I mean, I did it for a motel, which is really stupid, and that's not enough reason to give your life meaning. But when somebody shows that they care by, you know, spending $50 a night for a motel just so that, you know, somebody else can sleep there. You know, at first I thought, you know, I was just a customer. You're not in it to make money if you're giving me your money. I mean, that, so it showed that somebody actually cared. For that, I am very thankful.
If there's anything that we need to know about Kyle Maxson, it was like someone said, here's $1 million, Kyle, tell me what the first thing on your mind is. What would that be?
Wait, you're going to pay me $1 million?
That was the first thing on your mind.
Yeah, I mean, like, what am I gonna do with $1 million now?
We got big cameras here. This is like,
honestly, if you gave me $1 million, I'd go fly out and see my brother right now. I don't know what I'd do with $1 million, but I'd definitely go see my brother.
Thank you, Kyle Maxson.
Thank you.
Wow, man, that was the Kyle Maxson interview. You know, I do want to say before I do an underwriter here that Kyle, you know, it's been a little over 2 years, 2 years and a month. Kyle went out, man. He had a car. He was going to drive cross country. Broke down in L.A. He sold it. And, yeah, he's got a whole story on it. We'll have to get him back on and talk about his going to see his brother. But he spent about a year with his brother in Florida. And I really, really gave him a big hug when he came back to Chico going, hey, man, the first interview I did on the Without a Roof show, man, you said, I want to go see my brother, and you did. So I thought that was cool as heck. Speaking of cool as heck, Youth for Justice made possible by generous contributions of KZFR supporters and by Pita Pit, locally owned and operated in downtown Chico at 240 Broadway since 2004. Pita Pit features a variety of fresh Mediterranean, Greek, and American foods, including pita wraps, gyros, and deli favorites, all made to order. Pita Pit is open 7 days a week, with catering and delivery available by calling 899-2847. And by Tony's Hardwood Floors, specializing in the installation and restoration of hardwood flooring for home or office. For information and estimates, the telephone number for Tony's Hardwood Floors is 566-9436. Mark, we got about 3 minutes, man. What do you got on that piece?
Man, that story, basically, it felt like it was a trip down memory lane for me. Yeah. I agree entirely when he says Sixth Street kicks butt. I'm not even sure how there can be such an amazing group of people running an organization that helpful. And it's not because they have the most money. It's because the people there really do care. And I always got that sense. I can't think of a single staff member that I didn't like. And I think they take great care in hiring those sorts of people. And I remember, it's hard to even imagine where my life would be without them. That was my main service. It almost felt like that was my home base.
Yeah.
I don't even remember what it was like dealing with the idea that I'd have to do all this alone. I didn't feel alone when I was going to Sixth Street. when I was getting services from them. I mean, they had all the good stuff, like showers and clothes and deodorant, everything, you know, those basic human essentials. But I think what really sold it was the people. It felt like the people there aren't just great counselors. It felt like they were like your friends.
Mm-hmm.
It felt like they wanted you to do successful, but also they weren't pressuring you to be successful, and they wanted you to define what success was to you. And so they go about it very differently for each person, and that was amazing. Like, it felt like, you know, when I felt I didn't feel right about going about it one way, they wanted me to communicate that to them, and they wanted me to mm-hmm. basically make my own map towards being happy and independent, and that was amazing.
Yeah, when I talked to Lauren, I can't say enough about Sixth Street just from going in and out of there for the last 5 years, but Lauren, one of the case managers there, made the comment, everybody's dreams and hopes are different, and we're here to, help people to be successful for what they need to do. So, any wrap up, like a 30-second wrap up with Mark? 30-second wrap up with Mark.
I don't know. I would say that Lauren is especially one of those people who I went to specifically actually for counseling, and she's incredible. She makes you feel she is so understanding, and she will listen to you. And there's just when you're there, when I was there, I won't necessarily speak for other people, but I think a lot of people feel this way. It feels like they're there to support you, but there's no pressure to do any specific thing to find happiness and success.
Mark. Thanks so much, man. It's always a pleasure having you on the, we talked about Mark about doing this show, and I pitched it to him. He's like, oh, I get to listen and then commentate on what I heard. I love it. Mm-hmm. And you've exhibited that, man. You're just a joy to have in the studio. Kind of take us out. This is another Shahara Hyatt from the California Homeless Youth Project, but it's called Growing Up Fatherless. Next up is Beatle Nation, man. They're in the house. They're going to be handing off a CD here in a second. So thanks for listening for Youth for Justice here on People Power Radio.
I turned 13, or I was just like in the middle of 12. But it was me and my father and my mother and my brothers. We had like, my father, he was like addicted to cocaine and stuff. So one day he had took us to one of his friend's house. He took my whole family. Then he took our car and just left us there for like 3 days straight, and we didn't know this guy or nothing. So we just left and just never came back to him. But now I got back with my mom and my brothers. Me and my brothers were staying at a youth shelter. My mom, she was out, I think, at this place called Loaves and Fishes in Sacramento. It's like where all the homeless people go. We was there, then we weren't really getting anywhere, but until she found her new boyfriend, who was a minister, and they moved in together. And they started to get like housing and stuff. That's when we started to come into picture. 5 years ago, I was nearly on the midst of being homeless. 5 years from now, I'd like to be owning my own business, because I'm going to college for a major in business and technology. So that's where I'm trying to go, man. I think I need a little bit of financial support, but also a lot of like emotional support. Because there's not a lot of people that will help you. They'll be like, oh, yeah, that's cool. But they'll also try to bring you down because people don't like to see you make it, man. My biggest challenge is, like, making sure everybody else make it with me. Because if I just make it by myself, there's no point if my brothers don't make it. As long as everybody make it, I think that would be easiest. But we're not a team, so that's the biggest challenge, man. Yeah, I used to get in trouble a lot by the police. They used to pull me over. Because I used to hang out with my friends a lot, because I didn't really have no place to go. And my friends used to help me. And, like, they give me places. Like, oh, you can come up to my house. And I used to hang out in a big group, so. Yeah, getting choked by the police a lot. Well, for youth, there's a lot of things for youth already, but we need more things for people, like, over 18 to, like, 24, I believe, so that they can have a stable place to go. Because when you turn 18, you're still not an adult yet, but you still have that mindset of a child, so. If you see a troubled youth, you should police officer like should have the resources on them to give them a place to go. My dad's Bob Marley shirt. I kept that a lot. even though he did that to us, but I still kept that because he's my dad. It was cool. That's when he wasn't a bad guy, but he did bad things. So that kept me going. A place where you feel like you made it, like where you feel like this is where you have to be and this is where you should be. And you made it. That's the feeling. You don't know that feeling when it happens.